Tuesday and welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to national and regional agricultural news, today we hear about fall seasonal effects on E. coli in romaine lettuce, and you'll hear from the California Pecan Growers' new president. It all starts with a look at regional agricultural news right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In regional agricultural news, climate change is worsening the already significant threat of flooding in California's farm country, and state officials say that as much as $30 billion may be needed over three decades to protect the region, an increase from 5 years ago. Every 5 years, flood protection plans are updated for the Central Valley, where about 1.3 million people live at risk in floodplains. State officials released a draft of the latest update that calls for investing in levees, maintenance, and multi-benefit projects that recharge aquifers and support wildlife while enhancing flood protection. The investments are necessary to protect a growing region where climate change is expected to worsen a chance of heavy rains and flooding, especially for the San Joaquin River Basin. The cost of maintenance and new construction increased in part due to those changes and a better understanding of what is needed, according to the draft. The 2017 flood plan called for $17 billion to $21 billion in investments over three decades. Since that update, about $4.4 billion has been allocated. The latest draft said the need is now $25 billion to $30 billion over the coming 30 years. Those investments, however, will save lives and property, according to the plan. The Central Valley is in the state's interior and includes cities like Sacramento and Fresno. It also is home to a $17 billion agricultural economy, while the hurricane-prone Gulf Coast may be more associated with catastrophic flooding. The Central Valley is at significant risk. In 2017, severe weather forced officials to use the emergency spillway at Oroville Dam, about 75 miles north of Sacramento. Water tumbling over the spillway caused erosion, and nearly 200,000 people were temporarily evacuated as a precaution. California is struggling with drought, and this spring continues to be dry. Snowpack is well below average, reservoirs are low, and officials fear a bad wildfire season. But not having enough rain and snow does not mean flood risk has gone away, according to Nicholas Pinter, who researches watersheds at the University of California, Davis. He said the updates are usually about maintaining interest in flooding, especially during a multi-year drought. He says it's important not to neglect problems, even if they aren't immediately occurring. Finding enough money is a challenge, according to the draft. State funds are insufficient, and it is difficult to persuade local communities to pay enough for flood management, according to the plan. Opportunities to grab more federal dollars are increasing, however. Officials said combating climate change requires projects that do more than just prevent floods. Allowing floodwaters to spread out can also help recharge aquifers and improve habitat. The public can submit comments on the draft through early June. The Central Valley Flood Protection Board is responsible for reviewing the comments and adopting the update. A Democrat lawmaker from the Central San Joaquin Valley wants to put cash in the hands of eligible farm workers to help them deal with the devastation of California's drought. Proposed by California State Senator Melissa Hurtado, a Democrat from Sanger, Senate Bill 1066 would allocate $20 million to create the California Farm Workers Drought Resilience Pilot Project, a state-funded project that would provide unconditional monthly cash payments of $1,000 for 3 years to eligible farm workers with the goal of lifting them out of poverty. Part of the reason for the bill is that the agriculture industry lost over 8,000 jobs in 2021 alone due to the drought, according to Hurtado. She says this is climate change and they know this drought is ongoing. Part of the reason for the bill is that the agriculture industry lost over 8,000 jobs in 2021 alone due to the drought. The proposed legislation comes nearly a year after Hurtado wrote a letter to Governor Gavin Newsom urging him to prioritize farm workers with the $35 million a state earmarked for guaranteed basic income pilot programs. The fund agreed to by the governor and the legislature as part of the fiscal year 2021 2021 to 2022 budget will prioritize projects that serve former foster youth as well as pregnant individuals. Hurtado said the state needs to create more policies that support the agricultural workforce. The California Department of Food and Agriculture has selected 7 demonstration projects totaling about $1.12 million in grants from its Healthy Soils program. The program aims to improve soil health, sequester carbon, and reduce atmospheric greenhouse gases by funding on-farm demonstration projects that collect data and or showcase conservation management practices that mitigate GHG emissions and increase soil health. The funded projects are located throughout the state and range from academic organizations to nonprofit organizations and resource conservation districts, including the American Farmland. The project will demonstrate biochar application on a California almond orchard with the intent of analyzing the economic benefits. The Regents at the University of California, University of California, Davis, will receive money for a multifaceted plan to implement, measure, and assess the multi-co-benefits of climate-smart healthy soils practices. Grant money will be given to the Center for Land-Based Learning. The project aims to increase knowledge of the carbon sequestration and GHG reduction potential of biochar in a new 5-acre olive orchard, addressing knowledge gaps on biochar's ecosystem and assist in streamlining methodology. The California Marine Sanctuary Foundation will receive funding for a residue management and reduced tillage practice program designed to regenerate soil health in agriculture production while also storing carbon in working lands. And the University of California Davison of Agriculture and Natural Resources will receive funding for a multifaceted plan to increase the potential adoption of winter cover cropping by increasing the information available to growers who want to utilize the practice. And grant funding will be allocated to Rodale Institute for a project that aims to demonstrate economic viability and environmentally friendly management practices that improve soil health and vegetable production systems, with the intent to distribute information on the benefits of those practices to California farmers. Candarian Organic Farms will receive money for a project that will install new hedge grow through Candarian Organic Farms to improve security and provide a seed collection site while the farm expands its grassed waterways. The Healthy Soils Program was established as part of the California Healthy Soils Initiative, a collaboration between state agencies to support the development of healthy soils in California. The 2021 Healthy Soils Program was appropriated $50 million from state budget and $25 million through the California Climate Investments. Deere & Company has made a new move into the world of unmanned technologies, forming a joint venture with Gus Automation LLC based in Kingsburg, California in the San Joaquin Valley. Gus, an acronym for Global Unmanned Spray System, currently sells a pair of unmanned machines to treat high-value crops such as vineyards and orchards. Gus Automation traces its roots back to 1982 as an agriculture spray business called Crinklaw Farm Services. Along the way, CFS developed multi-row vineyard sprayers, mechanical vineyard pruners, and the Tree Sea Orchard Sprayer designed for young orchards. CFS now sprays 5,000 acres a day during peak season in California. Gus Automation functions as an individual business entity separate from CFS. It builds two machines, Orchard Gus and Mini Gus. Orchard Gus is 24 feet long and 6 feet 4 inches tall and comes in two widths, 8 foot 3 inches and 7 foot 6 inches. Mini Gus is 25% smaller, enabling it to move through high density plantings of orchards, vineyards, and berries. Its first units were delivered in 2019. The Deere Gus joint venture focuses on specific California high value crop systems. The joint venture will retain all Gus technology while Deere is gaining insight into Gus technology. By that measure, this is an interesting tech move for Deere, which is currently rolling out commercial technologies for its row crop customers. Deere will not be building the Gus units now, nor will Gus technology be applied to Deere products, but access to the technology fits well with Deere's technology-enabled product development work. This year, Deere has introduced its autonomous 8R tractor and a See & Spray camera visualization system designed to control weeds and manage resistance. Deere's $250 million purchase of Silicon Valley's Bear Flag Robotics last fall brings Deere a second technology approach to autonomy.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
E. coli infection outbreaks connected to romaine lettuce are more frequently associated with lettuce commercially grown and harvested at the end of the growing seasons in California and Arizona, and has been recognized for several years. Although contamination of lettuce products is rare, between 1998 and 2019, 36 outbreaks that traced back to lettuce were recorded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Most of these outbreaks involved romaine lettuce harvested in the fall on the California Central Coast, such as in Salinas, and in late winter in Southern California and Arizona. These two states are the major lettuce-growing areas in the United States, with farm production valued at nearly $2.7 billion as of 2021. Due to the potential seasonality of these E. coli outbreaks in bagged romaine, USDA ARS scientists began to uncover details underlying this pattern.
We observed that even when we put E. coli on the lettuce ourselves in the lab, E. coli survived better on the lettuce that we had harvested in the fall than on lettuce that we harvested in the spring. And that was very significant because it meant that it didn't have so much to do with an environmental factor that was related to maybe spring versus fall weather, but it may have had something to do with the way, with the property of the lettuce itself in the fall versus the spring, and perhaps also with its microbiome, because E. coli doesn't live on lettuce by itself. If it's there, it sees other microbes, many other microbes, right? And the microbiome of the lettuce was also different in the fall than in the spring. We did not establish so far a cause and effect of the microbiome on E. coli survival. Those are more specific experiments that we would have to do. But we know that there are seasonal trends in the microbiome as well. So it could be that the microbiome in the fall is very distinct in a way that supports E. coli survival better, that there are certain members of this microbiome, some types of bacteria, that help it survive better once the lettuce is in the bag and so on, because this is what we strictly tested. It was a post-harvest study. Or it could be that the trends in microbiome, the seasonal trends in the microbiome are also caused by something that is inherent to fall lettuce. And both E. coli and the microbiome kind of follow a certain pattern without necessarily having an effect on each other. But we cannot conclude that yet because we don't have all the data.
That was USDA ARS microbiologist Maria Brandl with the Produce Safety and Microbiology Research Unit of the ARS Western Regional Research Center in Albany, California. Her and her research team found that survival of E. coli on bagged lettuce differed by variety as well, whether or not it was a long shelf storage variety or a short one.
The lettuce that had even good shelf life tended to show higher decay in the fall. And we observed that the more decay on the lettuce, the more E. coli we found that survived. And so the question comes up about the integrity of the tissue, the lettuce tissue, in the fall versus the spring. And without making conclusions now, because we again are very interested in looking at lettuce physiology based on season. What does the lettuce look like, even at the microscopic level? Because you have to remember that these human pathogens that cause foodborne disease, their bacterial cells, they're tiny. And it matters what the tissue looks like at that microscopic level, because this is what affects the bacterial cells themselves. Of course, the consumer likes to get lettuce that looks pretty, healthy, green, crisp, everything. The bacteria, they are living at a different scale, right? Spatial scale, we would say. And so this issue came up about lettuce physiology. If we see more decay, is this just the tip of the iceberg? It's what we're allowed to see with the naked eye because the decay was visually rated. So it's strictly what is detectable with the naked eye. And this is something that we're very interested in going to explore because lettuce tissue is live tissue. Even after it's harvested, the plant cells are alive. They breathe, they respire, what happens after harvest to that lettuce tissue is important in terms of the habitat that it provides for microbes, including the occasional foodborne pathogen that may be there. So once we understand this better, perhaps we will find clues about how to, again, design some hurdles to prevent outbreaks from occurring, to prevent the survival of the pathogen, maybe to kill it even through some plant technologies that would be very interesting. And I think it could be very effective because instead of relying on some external control, you have the host itself actually providing some control measure.
Well, the findings showed that severity of E. coli seems to be seasonal on bagged romaine lettuce. Brandel said that there still is more research to be done in order to find preventative measures for E. coli during these seasons.
We have to start looking at lettuce physiology, the lettuce tissue, what does it look like, even at the physical level, to determine if this has something to do with the lettuce itself. It would make a lot of sense because we as human beings also react to be out in weather X versus weather Y. Lettuce very likely also reacts to weather patterns, right? And we know that fall weather is very different than spring weather. We know that late winter weather in Southern California and the Imperial Valley and Yuma is very different than the early part of like winter, basically. December is when they start growing lettuce there. So it would make sense that the lettuce is not quite the same. Whether that is the contributing factor to these our seasonal trends in E. coli outbreaks, we don't know. But we have one more clue with the results of this study. And then we have to see if the microbiome contributes to that as well, or if it's just a bystander that basically follows the same patterns as E. coli does.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In national agricultural news today, the U.S. Dairy Export Council and the National Milk Producers Federation sent a letter to the White House regarding specific recommendations to help solve supply chain issues. The top recommendation calls for USDA's Agriculture Marketing Service to restart its ocean shipping container availability report. Shipping containers from U.S. dairy exports continue to be in short supply at coastal ports and even more so at inland locations, according to Jim Mulhern, president and CEO of National Milk. He says these these essential links in a global supply chain must be available to exporters. Other recommendations include setting up pop-up terminal yards in inland locations like Minneapolis and Chicago. That would make it easier to secure shipping containers. They also want to see trucking fast lanes dedicated to delivering perishable agricultural goods as quickly as possible at port terminals. Krista Harden, president and CEO of the U.S. Export Dairy Council, says supply chain issues have cost dairy exporters over $1.5 billion last year alone. In honor of Earth Day, which was Friday, USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack announced the USDA is investing nearly $800 million in climate-smart infrastructure in 20 states and Puerto Rico. These investments are designed to strengthen the health and livelihoods of people across rural America. They include funding for 165 projects for expanding access to safe water and clean energy for people living in disadvantaged communities. People in rural America are experiencing the increasing impacts of climate change in many ways, according to Vilsack. This includes more severe droughts, more frequent wildfires, and more destructive and life-threatening storms. He also says investing in infrastructure in rural communities is investing in the planet and a peace of mind that children will drink clean and safe water in their homes. The agency will take steps to improve clean energy infrastructure, energy-efficient improvements, improve infrastructure in communities hit by severe weather, and advance equity in rural communities. President Joe Biden on Earth Day traveled to Washington State to sign an executive order to protect old-growth forests that could lead to more scrutiny of agricultural imports from certain countries. While much of the executive order focuses on language to protect U.S. forests, the order signed by the president on Friday also includes several provisions for the federal government to examine agricultural commodity imports from countries, allowing or turning a blind eye to large amounts of deforestation. To address global deforestation, the president's order directs the U.S. to reduce or eliminate the purchase of agricultural commodities grown on deforested lands that were done either illegally or in the recent past. USDA, along with the Secretary of State, Treasury, Commerce, the U.S. Trade Representative, and Homeland Security, will submit a report on possible legislation regarding the feasibility of limiting or removing specific commodities grown on land deforested either illegally or after December 31st of 2020 from agricultural supply chains. Added to that, the federal departments will provide an analysis with private industries, including major agricultural commodity buyers, traders, financial institutions, and others, to voluntarily reduce or eliminate the purchase of such commodities and incentivize sourcing of sustainably produced agricultural commodities. Nutrition and energy are among the titles found within a farm bill, legislation that some believe only contains farm safety net and support programs. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
A farm bill is about more than farms. Several titles within a farm bill, like the one being crafted now for hopeful adoption next year, are not just about farm safety programs. The largest amount of funding within the past several farm bills have come within the nutrition title, which covers the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and other domestic food assistance offerings. As National Farmers Union President Rob LaRue explains,
what we've seen over the course of several farm bills now is if you don't have a strong nutrition title, it is next to impossible to get a farm bill through.
The energy title promotes renewable energy development, and as Bill Scher of the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association explains, keeps the power on in rural America.
Rural utility service loans are critical for affordable, reliable power to rural America.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Earlier this month at Pecan Day in Yuba City, California, California Pistachio Growers Association held its election for its new president. Elected was Carlene Hanf, sales representative at Linwood Nursery, the only nursery in the state of California that deals in pecans. Hanf joined the show at Pecan Day to describe how she sees the pecan industry.
It's been small growth. Pecans have been one of the smaller nut crops. One of the main reasons is it takes a long time to come in production with pecan trees. We're working on that with nutrient programs and things like that to expedite that, but historically, it has taken a long time to bring trees into production. A lot of it has had to do with not only the nutrient, but also the training of the trees and everything so that we get the wood we need so that we're producing more earlier. But that's been one of the drawbacks, has been how long it takes pecans to come into production. You've got almonds that start producing like third leaf, walnuts fourth and fifth leaf. Historically, pecans have been starting production more like seventh, eighth leaf, and we're hoping to start proving that they can come into production, if done correctly, more like fifth leaf on the right varieties.
Hamp said that the most desirable pecan orchards for these conditions in California are the ones that employ Wichita Western and Schlage combinations of trees.
In the northern area, in the Sacramento Valley, normally you see those plantings in areas that are really well drained. They can go with varieties because they do produce later. They start coming in more around Thanksgiving and after, whereas you can go with some earlier varieties if you have heavy soil, like a Pawnee with pollinators that will come off earlier. But you give up something on production. Your Western Wichita is normally a more productive crop.
Hanf noted that Pecan Day was the first meeting that California Pecan Growers Association has had in person in around 6 years, and that there simply wasn't enough time to cover all of the important issues going on in the pecan industry. She said that at the next meeting, they hope to cover more specific issues.
Next meeting, hopefully we can have it a little longer and we can discuss more things on nutrient programs, herbicide programs, and hopefully include some continuing education credits in our program so that growers make time in your day to come. It's important to come anyway, but you can even get some continuing education with it. That would be really nice.
While the California pecan industry is dwarfed in comparison to the other major tree nut commodities, Hanf said there is still room for it to prosper.
Compared to some of the other nut commodities, almonds, walnuts, pistachios, pecans are much smaller. You know, some good points were made yesterday with regards to we're smaller, we can kind of adapt easily. But one of the main things that I took from that meeting was from the American Pecan Council. And they were saying that all it takes is like incorporating one more country into our sales program, and we've basically sold all the nuts that we have in the U.S. And really increasing our national sales just right here at home, we can move a lot of product right here. So that's a big deal right there. We have about 5,000 acres, we're guesstimating somewhere between 4,500 and 5,000. That's another thing I'm going to work on getting an actual good number on, because it's good to know what you have coming in and what's in full production. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be working on that. And also, one of the things that I'd like to see as the president, and I've talked to several growers, a lot of people put stock in California grown. And we'd like to have like a certified California grown product that consumers can look at and appreciate that it's coming to them with all of the ways Californians farm. You know, we hold ourselves to an extremely high standard, and I think we have an excellent product right here in California, pecans.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.